The newest from local talent Sad China, produced by Dog Days Are Over, that was Rainbow Prayer. Before that, you heard Sukin Lee and Adam Liedowitz with Lake Girls. My name is Leslie, and you're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm chatting with Gal, local artist and tattooist, about the complications, the complicatedness and nuance and stuff of being a Chinese settler living in Canada. We're going to continue on with the conversation now. Enjoy.
In terms of the term Chinese Canadian, I have a bit of a contentious, I don't know if contentious is the right word. I have a not very confident relationship with the term Chinese Canadian, because in one way, I understand to certain people that unless I add the Canadian to the end of that, I'm not going to be respected. But when I say Chinese Canadian, am I not upholding, you said, settler colonial thinking and being yeah, I'm Chinese Canadian, therefore you should value me? And then what about my new Chinese immigrant counterparts? Do they not count? Also, I'd like to mention, I actually had this conversation with a friend recently. I'm jumping between topics. But in terms of understanding our intersections on our identity as a Chinese person and a Chinese Canadian, despite my shaky opinions on that term, I have a privilege because in this society, and I don't agree with it, but in this society, I'm lucky that my full name can actually come off not Chinese, and I speak with an accent. So if you don't see my face, I have a lot more access to spaces, getting a job, doing phone interviews and all that. I've actually entered a few workplaces, and when people see me, they're like, "You have a very interesting name. How did you get that?" And I'm like, "My dad gave me a name because he asked his coworker, who's not Chinese, by the way." And then just being aware that we're not a monolith and all Chinese Canadians or all Chinese or all Asian people, we're all under the same struggle. No, I have quite a lot of privilege. And while I always never say academia is something that should put you above others, I don't believe that. I actually think academia is very problematic. I still have the privilege of going to UBC, getting to go to different courses that taught me and gave me the vocabulary and the tools to defend myself. I majored in sociology, just FYI, why I have these tools. I'm able to defend myself and able to actually maybe make someone do a double take and be wow, I shouldn't mess with this person. Whereas someone with a Chinese accent might be saying the exact same thing as me. And then someone here is just yeah, shut up, C word, you know? I think that's something really important to remember. And okay, bouncing back to that topic that I was talking about in terms of Chinese Canadian, I also say that I'm fourth generation Chinese, but Chinese Canadian, but it's not something I'd like to bring up in most conversations, because I don't think the amount of time that my family has been here makes me more important than anyone else. But I have to bring it up in certain spaces because those people value that. And unless I bring it up, like, they won't listen to me. And it's so weird and stupid that these are the values. And then, like, when I had conversation, I'm like, I'm fourth generation Chinese Canadian. And people are like, wow, that's longer than me. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I know. It's just, was it so shocking that it made your brain rewire how you perceive me now? Am I more valid? Are you like, wow, like, you know, gal's actually like more Canadian than I am. And it's like, I don't know if I want to be more Canadian than anyone else, because I'm not a fan of Canada's history, right? And also, I just want to say this just on the record, we are simply squatters, you know? We face a lot of discrimination in Canada, but we are still squatters on Indigenous land. Let's remember that. So that's another thing about understanding our intersectional identities. Like, when I talk about the strife the Chinese, like, community has experienced in Canada, like, for histories, that is not without me acknowledging that we are on Indigenous land. And I would also like to state, like, two facts that I, like, learned a couple years ago that I've been trying to just, like, educate people on. When our people were building the railways, and when the railway was done, we were basically abandoned and left to die. Can I say die on the radio? Okay. We were left to die. Do you know who came to our rescue? Indigenous people. When white colonialists just left us because we finished doing the thing they needed us to do, and, like, our Chinese men were dying on the tracks, at the side of the tracks, Indigenous people were the ones to come gather our men and nurture us. Like, and that's why if you look into, like, Vancouver specifically, there's a lot of, like, Indigenous Chinese, like, intermingling history there. And also, when it came to the Komagatamaru ship, they were not allowed to dock. Thanks, Canadian government. I can't remember how many days they were, like, just stuck, like, outside, like, our port. But basically, everyone there was starving, ran out of food and water, were dying. Indigenous people were the ones to, like, canoe to the ship and pass over resources so folks could sustain themselves, right? So it's like July 1st, technically, like, quote-unquote Canada Day. And, you know, I'd like to say that despite, can I say genocide?
Yeah, we're not, like, okay, we're not hiding truths here.
Okay, no, I just don't know if it's, like, too triggering, right? Despite, like colonialization and genocide, Indigenous people continue to be good and humanitarian. And I just want to mention that so we all remember. And also, as a Chinese person, even though I mentioned a history of, like, Indigenous Chinese, like intermingling, that's not to say that Chinese people have not been discriminatory and racist to the Indigenous community. And we have to remember that and be accountable for that. And I know the argument of, like, colonialism is like, well, my family didn't do that, when it comes to, like, white folks being like, I didn't do that, like, I'm against it. And it's like, but you still benefit from it. And Chinese people also, well, okay, a lot of immigrants still benefit, are harmed by colonialism, but also benefit on colonialism, in the sense that we are still on stolen land, and Indigenous people have not received, like, any ample sort of reconciliation. Anyways, I went on a tangent there, but this is just, like, many examples of just intersections. And I guess that's, like, an endless topic. The more you dig into history, like the more intersections you notice and the more things that you realize you have to keep in mind. And I don't think that's like a burden on anyone. I think it's good to remember. And it's more mindful. And I've had conversations in the past in like my university days where I guess we weren't as progressive, where people are always like, what's the past? Or like, I don't think that's racist. I should be allowed to do this or do that. And I'm like, at the end of the day, if I were to simplify it, I don't, because I think we should have nuance. But if I were to simplify, I would say like, this XYZ racist thing you're doing is harmful and makes this person from this marginalized group like feel bad. Also, like, I'm simplifying it, but like also generational perpetuated trauma, etc., you know. And I'm like, you want to have fun, and that's more important than making sure this person doesn't feel like crap because you're having fun in doing this. Which, if I wanted to circle back, is like everyone going to have fun at a speakeasy in Chinatown. I don't know how many speakeasies we're going to have in the next 5 years, but we already have two, and that's too many. I hope the business owners don't come for me. You know, like, I don't know if like we don't have enough grocery stores, are we supposed to have our like papas and our gonggongs like go to a speakeasy to have their like dinner? Like, you know? They're like, you know, this is all the money I have this month, but I'm going to get like this like cocktail that references opium. And I'm going to have these like really expensive like little appies of like, I don't know, edamame or something.
You know, Gal, I think it is all connected. So much of it is connected. You know, what we're discussing here about like having a complicated relationship with our cultural identity, and then also the, you know, what's on our passport, essentially, right? And then at the same time, kind of knowing what certain benefits we have because of that. And then so how can we use those identifiers or those resources to show up for other communities as well, is mm-hmm. it's all interconnected. It's all so it's all very relevant. Something that I thought of while you were talking about, you know, your the conversation that you had with your friend and all these examples that you brought up. I think a lot of people, I'm not trying to throw folks a bone here, but I am trying to say, like, the way that I think activism and allyship is framed, particularly in this in the time that we're at right now, where like things are done very rapidly because like they're trending on social media and things like that, and it feels like everything needs to be done immediately. I mean, also because of, you know, the legacy of oppression makes us feel like we've had enough, right? Mm-hmm. I think it prompts like a lot of people who have good intentions to unfortunately show up in ways that are beyond their capacity. And they don't really understand that like you can show up in ways that are within your capacity, right? Like, I remember on the similar topic, I remember like when my friend and I were discussing the protests that were happening around like Land Back and also around Black Lives Matter, we discussed like, you know, going to a protest it requires a lot, and you mm-hmm. have to be prepared. If you're not prepared, for example, to potentially experience and see some things that are really awful, maybe stay back and like do some other form of, you know, like challenging and resisting, right? Because these things going onto the front line isn't for everybody, no matter their intention, no matter how much good they can do, it's not for everybody. At the same time, it could be the opposite, right? Like, you know, like reading book after book after book is not going to be for everybody, but rather going on the front line and talking to people might be. So many people like don't consider that how you express your solidarity does not always have to be like jumping in head first. Those, you know, the incident that you were talking about, the incarceration of the two Black femmes, it's very obvious that like those white people who showed up were not prepared to meet a police flare. Right? Like, if you're going to a protest like this and you think it's just going to be like a nice little kiki, like, that's not what it is, especially if the most visible people are like some of the most marginalized people of our society, right? They are the easy targets.
It's also a privilege to assume that going to a protest where majority of the participants are Indigenous or Black, and just to, it's a privilege to assume that cops are not going to get involved. Like, that, having that perspective is a privilege. So for like, I'm not saying like you need to fight the cops, like white allies, you know, like I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like, you know, you're very privileged to be like, oh my God, I didn't know this was gonna happen. This is so scary. And I'm like, that's still a privilege, you know?
Yeah. It's very much like that. Like, obviously we don't want anybody to get arrested and we're not encouraging anybody to get arrested. But the fact of the matter is like, you know, if you are not ready to, if you are not like fully informed, maybe don't show up to a protest, right? Like, if you don't know that, like, for example, if you don't know to remain incognito at a large protest, maybe don't be there. If you don't, if you're not ready to like put your freaking phone away, you know, don't go, right? Yeah. And I that's like, I've lost my train of thought. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. In terms of like trends and moving fast, I also feel like that was the case with like protesting, especially like summer 2020. Have I been saying 2010 earlier? I don't know. But summer 2020 is when a lot of like protesting became huge in North America in general, and Vancouver's was like definitely on the same trend. And I feel like everyone wanted to participate, but not everyone really understood the nuances of protesting and organizing and, you know, just like mobilizing yourself. And I'm not saying like, oh my gosh, unless you're like super informed, don't even bother coming. I think it's important to have numbers. It's important to show up. But yeah, I think like, there needs to be more conversation aside from like, yeah, you know, like I came because everyone's coming here. Like, my whole friend group in this chat said like, we're going to go support, and then you're done. Also, just on the flip side, I just want to mention, so people are aware, you've already touched on this, Leslie, like going to a protest is not always accessible. And it also depends on if organizers make it accessible for everyone. For example, like if there are maybe sign language interpreters at the front interpreting what speakers are saying. And if even like where the location is, like, can people access that? Not everyone has a car. Not everyone has enough money to spend on transit fares. And sometimes like different people have different skills. So you maybe like contributing more by, I don't know, organizing on Twitter and letting people know like, hey, just to be aware, like the protest is becoming unsafe because on this end of the street, cops are coming down. So, and then you're just letting people know on Twitter, right? I actually saw that on a Twitter thread, that those were examples of how you can participate in a protest, even if you cannot physically be there, right? even if you can't physically be there, like you can also, I don't know, volunteer to paint signs for the protests, like a couple weeks before, you know, and then give those out. You can look into a lot of different things. There's a lot of different things that people can do. And I think it's important to know that while we do need to show up in numbers for causes we care about, it's also important to diversify what we do and also lean on our strengths. For example, like I am an artist, so I did a little zine to talk about how I feel with Chinatown and to educate people, right? Would me going into politics be just as useful? Probably not. I would say I would probably educate people with my words, but I probably wouldn't get anywhere in terms of politics. So yeah, like we all have different strengths, and I think it's important to contribute where we can. And I think the term show up is really good, and people just need to know that show up doesn't always mean physically showing up if it's not accessible. But that's not to say, you know, just because you're better at doing art doesn't mean you should not ever go to a protest. You still should if you can.
Yeah, I definitely hear where you're coming from with that. There are many ways for people to show up.
We're hitting the top of the hour here on Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gal. I really want to encourage you, if you haven't listened to part one of this two-part series called Chinese Canadian Power Hour, please do so. It's up on CJSF's archive right now at cjsf.ca. Gal is a very thoughtful and passionate person, and I'm so grateful that they joined me on the show excitedly and so graciously as well, even though the invitation was so last minute. Very grateful for them and their work. If you're interested in checking out more of Gal's stuff and to follow their activism and art, you can find them on Instagram at lucky.munyi. That's lucky.munyi. Thank you so much again to Gal for joining me on the program. Tune in to more great CJSF programming by checking out Speak Up Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday on CJSF from 10 to 11, talking about local issues, topics, organizing, arts. Lots of stuff to cover there. Go check it out. Speak Up every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, 10 to 11. My name is Leslie. Here's one last song for the hour. This is Electric Girl by Hua Li. Enjoy.